Now, Darren Harbutt is not new to the teacher's lift. Back in 2020, he featured in one of our early episodes with Hong Kong U hosts Phil Smith and Aditi Javery, where he shared his expertise on blended learning with a focus on e-assessment. Now it's the turn of Dawn Gillis and Eric Tindall asking the questions as we take a look in the rearview mirror of the last 2 years and ask whether there've been any silver linings to all the hurdles we faced since the days when Zooming required a telephoto lens. In this illuminating discussion, Darren introduces us to the exciting new world of HyFlex, where in-class instruction meets on- and offline learning and leaves us asking the question, will this become the new normal?
All right, everybody, welcome back to the Teacher's Lift. We're coming at you from the Hong Kong Polytechnic University once again. Eric Tindall here, along with my co-host, Dawn Gillis.
Hello, Eric.
How are you, Dawn?
Enjoying I'm all the, right.
The closed beaches?
Are you? Yes, the beaches are shut, but we are surviving.
Yeah, it makes perfect sense, doesn't it, right now to shut the beaches, the epicenter of virus spread, I guess. But of course, that gives us more time indoors and indoors in front of computer screens. And who better to talk about that than today's guest? And he was actually on the podcast 2 years ago. And I'm sure he'll confirm this when this whole pandemic was getting started. We've had a lot of changes in those 2 years. And I'm sure he is happy to share them with us today. He is Mr. Darren Harbutt from the senior Educational Development Officer at the Educational Development Center of the Hong Kong Polytechnic University. A lot of words there. So Darren, thank you. Thank you for joining us today.
Thanks for inviting me. Nice to see you again, Eric, and Dawn and Adam. Good to be here.
2 years ago, I know we had a lot of changes since the last time you were on. And the last time you were on, you talked a little bit about, you know, what platforms to use when it came to online teaching. There was a debate about Blackboard or Zoom. You talked about how, you know, students can prove their identity during assessments, some of the nuts and bolts, but we've progressed beyond that, right?
We're way beyond that now. And then we're back into it, and then we're way beyond it, and then we're back into it again. That's right.
So what would you say are the new challenges facing all the online teachers out there?
Hybrid is going to be a challenge for the future. We had the teachers went through hybrid at PolyU and other places last semester as kind of an emergency response, or as a softening of the emergency response. And part of me thinks that although that's a huge challenge, and I know that it's probably quite unpopular with teachers, part of me sees that as a potential future gold standard for modern flexible instruction. So the HyFlex, hybrid flexible model of hybrid. It's still the results are in from students, which is that they were quite accepting of learning online and the teachers were quite able to do it. And the feedback shows that I think that the students have become increasingly happy. And I imagine that's because the teachers are doing it increasingly well. So I think another, not challenge, but another way forward is to make sure that we move well beyond it being an emergency response, whether it continues in the pandemic or not, and we fully consider the pedagogies of online teaching. So there's hybrid, there's the pedagogies of online teaching. I guess the assessment one is still a hugely difficult thing.
Yeah,
difficult nut to
crack. Yeah, Darren, things have progressed a lot in the 2 years, but in so many ways, not much has changed for us here in Hong Kong, especially teaching wise. But you mentioned about hybrid mode. Do you see that as part of our future progressing in the educational sector, even when things do, let's say, return to quote unquote normal?
Yeah, I do. I really do. A lot of the expensive, highly regarded educational institutions, such as Harvard and some business schools, they're really pushing HyFlex as the mode of choice. These are institutions that charge, I don't know how much they charge for their classes. Maybe they charge standard rates, I don't know. But these are hugely influential and valued institutions pushing HyFlex, where the student gets the choice. And at PolyU, I know the student wasn't supposed to have the choice, but the teachers were reporting numbers varying from lesson to lesson. So students were clearly exercising that free choice, whether they were supposed to or not. So we had a form of high, it wasn't just standard hybrid, it was high flex. It was students making the decision maybe from one class to another, whether they were going to do it or not. So I do think that that for me seems like a new potential gold standard. I think it's hard. I know it's hard.
Yes.
It was hard for me delivering workshops or webinars in that mode. But yeah, I really do see that as part of the future of education.
Sure. And do you think that it's going to be part of all teaching or just for particular subjects such as lecture style classes? Or like, for example, you know, here in the ELC, we are more of a seminar, you know, like an interactive language learning program. So I don't know, do you think that it fits with that or it could be for anything?
I guess I'm inadvertently referring to a lecture rather than any other mode of class when I'm talking about that, yeah. Although I don't think it needs to be only for that. If you look at the Harvard Helix, I think is their project on hybrid, where they've got very, very expensively equipped classrooms. And they're not big groups. It looks more like an ELC size class rather than Applied Social Sciences 101 that's got like 500 in there or something like that, because it's an expensive university with smaller classes. But the rooms that they've got, the interactions can happen, or the way they've set up the rooms and the skill of the teacher, the interactions can happen somewhat seamlessly. So it would also be applicable to the seminar mode as well. Yeah,
right,
for sure.
So now that we're on the subject of hybrid teaching or this high flex model, and this is actually the first time I've heard this term. So Darren, let me just correct me if I'm wrong. High flex means the hybrid teaching model. So there's an online option and also a face-to-face option. And the flex part comes in where the student has a choice as to which format they attended. Is that correct?
Yeah, it is. And the other thing I would say is when you read about high flex models, it mentions that the class is designed so that the learning outcomes would be the same for the online folks and the face-to-face folks, which of course doesn't mean that they have to be doing the same activities. They can be doing two separate activities. They can be combined. They can be doing some activities separate and some combined. But it means that the online is not the second class citizen. It means the online and the face-to-face are both getting equal love. And clearly when teachers are thrown into this model without preparation, without too much preparation, this is not a criticism, it's an observation of fact. Teachers were thrown into this without probably enough preparation in rooms that were not designed for it. So I guess at the heart of HyFlex is choice, equal quality ILOs for face-to-face and online, well-equipped classrooms, well-prepared teachers, and an acceptance that this is something desirable from everybody.
Yeah.
So that's sorry, yes, go on.
Oh, no. I was just thinking about this high-flex model. And yeah, it's the first time I also heard this terminology. So thanks for bringing it forward. I know that students, as you said, you got quite a lot of positive feedback from students last year saying that they enjoyed the online and the hybrid mode, or they were okay with it. What about the teachers? Did they give you any response
Okay, I haven't got the figures in front of me, but I know EDC did a study, a survey on this. If I recall correctly, there was perhaps more acceptance amongst students than there was teachers, if I recall correctly. And I think that would probably be a fair guess that that's the way it is, because for students, I mean, especially hybrid, it's just win-win. You do what you choose to do. And for teachers, that's not the case at all. It's the difference between doing what you know well face-to-face maybe, or even online, and then having to combine them. It's hellish, I know. The other thing as well, I remember, recently, I've been looking at the National Student Survey results from the UK, where it seems that even now, well, the British government on the one hand is saying now that the COVID is gone, everything should be face-to-face, which is a government talking. And the students don't seem to agree with that at all. The students seem to prefer HyFlex or hybrid for lectures. They want the choice. They enjoyed the online of lectures. And face-to-face, they value for the smaller sessions. And again, that doesn't come as a surprise, but the UK NSS actually shows the figures for this. For lectures, students prefer the choice of online or face-to-face, and for small groups or seminars, they prefer face-to-face. And I'm not sure if, I'm sure teachers would agree with the latter. I'm not so sure if teachers would agree with the former.
I think those numbers do sound like a reasonably accurate guess, at least in Dawn and I, in our experience. The students, of course, yeah, they're students, they're customers. They like the flexibility. They like being able to choose whether or not, you know, to go into the classroom, see people, or if they prefer to, you know, watch the lecture in their warm bed. You know, who wouldn't want that choice?
Exactly. And the FT ran an interview on this article based on the results of the NSS with some learning institutions, some universities in the UK. And the ones that they were speaking to there were saying, we're not going to abandon the online for lectures. We are going to be moving forward with hybrid because we want to give our students what they want. So it looks like at least lecturers, teachers, professors in those institutions, they're going to have to get with it with hybrid, and the ITSs and the EDCs are going to have to get with it, training and providing facilities as well.
So yeah, that brings us to our next question, I guess, which is how do we get with it? Because for the teachers, it's an incredible burden to be able to plan these two simultaneous lessons, or to focus on two groups of students at one time at the same moment. And I know this is a question that opens up a whole different can of worms, and you can feel free to run with it in any way you want, but if you had to give any advice to, you know, to a teacher out there who's about to teach a high flex course, what would you give them?
I think the administrators have to set more time available for the preparation of this new approach, and it needs to be resourced in terms of time, training, facilities, and all of those things. Training and facilities is one that I think university, I'm speaking globally, I'm not speaking about PolyU. I think training and facilities is one that maybe the universities get right and have got right, I'd like to think. The support that teachers at PolyU have been given, I think, has been as good as it could be considering the circumstances, and the attitude of the university has been as cooperative and as understanding as it possibly can. I think the one thing that's missing is the planning stage, the curriculum development stage of it, which needs to be redone. You need to start again. So just the idea that with a simple blended learning approach, the idea is that for the best results from blended learning, you're going right to the curriculum. You're not just going, oh, next week I'm going to do a flipped approach, which is maybe fine, but, you know, and the same with assessment. If you're going to change assessment, as we know, assessment drives education, change it before the course starts so that students know what they're working for towards. So the same with hybrid, it would mean a complete rewrite. I mean, complete rewriting, but not from zero. You'd look at everything you have. You think that works for the face-to-face. What would be good? How can we adapt this for the online? So it would be dedicating the time and the resources to proper planning, course development, and curriculum preparation. I think that's the tough one. And I'm not sure where the buck stops there. Is it the teach? Does it stop with the teacher? Does it stop with the department? Or does it stop with the university?
Right. Darren, you have mentioned about reformulating some of the semester plans, so to speak, to adapt to this hybrid mode or even fully online. I'm just curious about what you think about assessments, because obviously that is a big thing that has had to change in the last couple of years, you know, the mode in which we conduct and give the assessment. How do you think that we can tackle the problem of academic integrity? I think that is quite, a hot topic, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, partially the answer is the same, by not dealing with it as an emergency response, but by proactively planning an assessment process that you're able to stick with, at least until you actually deliver the assessment. And that's clearly not been the case in the last few semesters, because every semester so far has had a change at least once during the semester, which is unforeseen, of course. Okay, let me give you an example of different thoughts on this. You know, PolyU, for example, instigated a homegrown version of invigilated online exams, using Blackboard assessment as the heart of it, with Zoom and two devices, I think, at the beginning, and now that's down to one device.
Right.
At the same time, PolyU was advising, and EDC was trying to help, with teachers plan alternative forms of assessments, like open book assessments, take home exams, coursework, et cetera, et cetera. So, I mean, that's the way to do it, to consider all the the way to do it is to consider the alternative types of assessment that don't require such strict invigilation, first off. A little anecdote, Polly, you asked me to lead a team looking at online proctored solutions, commercial solutions. We're doing a project now where we're evaluating the paid for ones, and we've got a bit of budget, and we've shortlisted it to 4 paid for ones, and we're about to run pilots with those tools. And we had 4 academics on the project with us, and we're going to be working with those students. And they've stayed with us, and they've done the review of the top 9 online proctored solutions tools in the market. We've just finished that. We're now down to 4. And we're trying to plan when are we going to pilot these four systems. And one of the academics wrote back and said, I have to say to you, I won't be piloting it because I don't believe in online assessment like this. I won't do it with my students. I was happy to give you advice and review during, but now we're at this stage, I'm not going to do it. And I wrote back and said, well, thank you for your honesty, and I really value that. And we carried on the discussion, and he just said, you know my thoughts, and I'm into open book assessment. I'm into take-home exams. I'm into the pedagogies of writing good take-home exams, which include varying question types and personalization and all these other pedagogical techniques, so that academic integrity is not going to be such an issue. And I replied, said, I think that's brilliant. I don't think online proctored assessment is going to replace that. I think it can support it at the same time. So one way of ensuring academic integrity is by just not using an exam that needs to enforce it via invigilators. And the other way is if you truly have to, because you have to do these types of exams for external bodies or things like that, you accept that no system is foolproof, but you get the best system that you possibly can. So the former is quite complex because it's different question types. For the latter, a lot of it relies on the technology, doesn't it? So these proctored solutions, they have AI proctors. So it's an artificial intelligence watching what the student does during the exam. And if any behavior is a bit unusual, you have real-time proctors or invigilators. I'm not quite sure what the difference is between a proctor and an invigilator, so I kind of flip between the two. And you make sure that those invigilators have fewer rather than larger numbers of students to take care of. You have to use multiple devices, or they have to do a room scan where they pick up their 27-inch iMac and move it around the room like, oh, look, see, no one's here. But again, at the first hurdle, that can fall, because if a student says, I need to use the bathroom, you're not going to say no. I mean, unless you invigilate, unless you have a policy that the student literally cannot leave their screen. That falls apart the first time the student goes to the toilet. So I suppose what you do then, you make sure that the exam you're given is still pedagogically sound, in as much as that 5 minutes that the student's away from the camera. What are they honestly going to be able to do? There's nothing they can do because the exam is somehow personalized for them and different from their mate who's also been told to go to the bathroom at 11:45 so they can have a quick chat session.
So it's almost, yeah, there are so many different, you know, aspects you've got to pay attention to. And
if your exam needs some form of invigilation, there's always a way to cheat, isn't there? There always was,
right?
Where someone had something written on a small piece of paper and went to the bathroom to read it in the face-to-face world. And online, I presume there are more chances to do that. So if your assessment depends on that, there are always going to be chances.
Right.
I did a master's program fully online where the teacher never met me once. And he said the key is in giving assessments where it's not an exam, it's project work, where you work with the student throughout and they submit a first draft after 1 week where there's really not much to say, and then a second draft. I don't know, where you can kind of see the development of ideas, so you can tell whether it's a different person or the same person doing the assessment over the entire semester. But as I said, my wife could have started on day one doing my assessments and she could be doing them all the way through the semester. You don't know that. And he said, no, I don't know that. Yeah. I don't think there's an entirely foolproof way, but he was designing pedagogically sound assessments and asking us to defend things orally. So this bit of writing you did, you said, you know what I mean? He would organize an oral set. You said this. Why did you say that? So he said, again, I don't know if you can do this if you've got groups of 500 students. but with 30 students doing a master's, he claims that he was in, he said he doesn't doubt for one minute that it's academic, that it's that there's academic integrity, just because he said he is so involved with all of his students throughout the entire assessment process that he knows it's sound.
And sometimes we forget that these challenges are in appear in face-to-face mode as well, right? I mean, we don't really know all the time that the student who's turning in this paper, even if they're handing it to us, really was the one who wrote it. Or
exactly. There's been fake people turning up at assessments, doing them on behalf of someone else. They've been paid to turn up. So in the face-to-face realm, it's tricky as well.
Right. So sometimes we may spend too much time just obsessing over this detail when kind of we're losing track of the broader pedagogy or some of the students, you know, achieving the learning outcomes instead of focusing so much on the nuts and bolts.
Don't devote impossible amounts of time to all the technological fixes, because they're not going to be perfect. Put deterrence in, make it tricky. And beyond that, make sure that you're designing your assessments, whatever they are, in a pedagogically sound way that makes cheating unlikely.
Right. And that's one of the lessons that we've learned more over the last 2 years, right? That when it comes to designing assessments or designing pedagogy. But you mentioned that you think the high flex model is going to continue. We're going to have more, definitely a stronger online component to all classes in the future, or to most classes. But is there anything that you think shouldn't continue that we've been doing these last 2 years that isn't going to, you know, live on past the pandemic?
No is my short answer to that, because there's nothing we've implemented. Let me think. I was waving the flag for educational technology before the pandemic. There's nothing that we've implemented that I hadn't thought about before, really. Maybe hybrid. Maybe I hadn't thought about hybrid before. And I've already said that I'm convinced that hybrid can work for many reasons. Nothing I can think of offhand. No. Do you have a specific example of something that you hope doesn't continue?
No, I don't. Yeah. And I was also, before I asked that question, I was thinking to myself, you know, is there anything that that has just been a complete failure? Now, many teachers would say that hybrid teaching has been a complete failure, but as you argue, you know, it's something that, listen, it's going to happen anyway. You know, the university administrators are going to put this in because they want to keep the students satisfied.
Even if let's hope that we get back to like the pandemic not affecting behavior. Even if we have that, and all of our students, all of our regular Hong Kong PolyU students are in Hong Kong, we might still want to work with groups of students from other universities and with other time zones. And at times like that, high flex is the only hybrid of some sort is the only approach you can get if you want to do it synchronously. You've got students in one place, you've got students in another place. One group is going to appear online to the other group of students. I think that's a fantastic collaboration. So that's an example for me of the way that hybrid can work, not necessarily with every lecture, every day, on every course, if you've got them all there face to face. And you've got teachers with a gun at your throat saying, don't make me do hybrid every day. Fine, then don't. But there are good reasons to do hybrid, or for a guest speaker from another place zooming in. For me, that's still a form of hybrid, especially if you're comfortable with it. If you're comfortable with the technologies, I mean, so you've got the Big Brother-esque figure on the screen talking, you've got people there raising questions. He or she can see you because you've got cameras. I think things like that are definitely here to stay and should be here to stay. I hope that, yeah, so I don't want to confuse things from there. So that definitely is good, and I think will continue in certain circumstances. I think there's a value to it. The online assessment in some ways is better than pen and paper assessment. I mean, not necessarily online as in I'm sat at home, but we've worked with EDC has worked with departments using lockdown browser because they want their students to do exams on computers because nobody writes with pen and paper anymore. You know, I mean, I grew up with pen and paper and I like pen and paper and I'm useless at it now, even though I love it. So our students that didn't grow up with it and don't like it, wow, you know, to ask them to do stuff on paper, I think is just a bit of a nonsense. So in situations like that, we maybe want to use the technology, but we don't necessarily want to do it at a distance with all of us separate. So that's where you have. So I think something that would be nice, I know we've done, is the idea of bring your own devices. Using a bit of technology which is safe and fit for purpose, and the learners all sit there in one place and they're doing their stuff on their devices rather than pen and paper. So even apart from all the alternative forms of assessment, open book, project work, even apart from all those, standard assessment with everyone doing the same thing at exactly the same time, why not use a bit of technology for that? So I see that continuing. Fully online education is fully online is definitely continuing. I'm aware of at least one master's program at PolyU that's going to be fully online. I think I probably bored everyone last time we did this podcast by saying my master's was fully online and eminently flexible, as in my master's was delivered face-to-face full-time, face-to-face part-time, and online, all at the same time by the same teachers and sometimes with the same groups. And you were allowed to flip between each one you wanted. So if you wanted to go back to Manchester where it was for a semester, you could do that full-time. For me, that's just brilliant. And I think PolyU should be doing things like that.
Absolutely, Darren. Actually, I think there's quite a few of us that have completed master's degrees or some sort of postgraduate study completely online. And to be honest, I think that the universities here in Hong Kong, they should be offering a choice to the students. You know, like the class is either delivered in a face-to-face mode or it's delivered in an online mode. It just works. You have to think about the students that maybe have a job and they want to take a class at 9 or at 8 o'clock at night. Well, there's something offered at 8 o'clock at night that's online. I wanted to ask you, because you'd mentioned that nothing has really I guess that you were not doubting that anything wouldn't work over the last couple of years with using hybrid mode and online mode. But I wanted to know, has anything surprised you that's happened in the last couple of years? Or no, you just think everything went sort of as you expected it would go, like going from face-to-face mode to the current modes we're in now?
Yeah, I'm more like gloating and chuckling and saying, told you so. because there's a slide I've given a couple of times which said, like, when in 2018 we had the burning e-learning questions and statements were all things like, in terms of statements, it was we're not going to be able to replicate. No, in terms of statements, it was students are not ready for fully online education, teachers are not ready for online education, and the questions were along the lines of how can we replicate a face-to-face class online. I think these were like three of the main questions. And time has shown that the teachers did it, students did it, and replicating is probably not the best approach anyway. It's building from scratch that's fit for purpose, more or less. So no, I didn't feel surprised. I always thought that teachers would be able to do it. Maybe I wasn't convinced that the students would be so accepting of it as it appears that they have been. Maybe that's the one thing. So it's a pleasant surprise. Diana Lorillard, again, I can't remember what I said in the last podcast. Someone's going to probably compare these and just say, this is exactly the same thing every time. Diana Lorillard is like one of the leading lights for technology enhanced education in the UK. And she was basically saying that she did not think that fully online education was the best for undergraduates. Not because you can't, just because you shouldn't. Because they miss out on so much of the other things that are important about undergraduate life. So yeah, I'm not advocating for masters, knock yourself out. Old folk doing masters, we should be able to choose online if we want.
Sure.
But for younger folk doing undergraduate, I don't think fully online is necessarily the solution, no.
Right, yeah. And just as you said, there's so much other aspects of learning, you know, entails an undergraduate degree, yeah, you know, that you cannot replace.
But so that's back to that NSS results again, maybe for lectures, give undergraduates the choice if you can, and especially for large lectures, and for the other classes, let's get them physically co-located.
Sure. So I want to know then, is there anything that you're really excited about then in the future, as to where the direction of our learning is going? I mean, hopefully we will be returning to some sort of classroom here at PolyU, hopefully in September. Do you think that we're going to keep this hybrid mode, or How do you think it's going to go? I'm so curious.
Without using the online, I mean, I don't know how it's going to go. It's all in terms of pandemic control, I guess. Sure. That's the one that's leading the decision. So in terms of how it's going to go, I don't want to stick my neck out there. I really don't know. In terms of what excites me, it's basically the building quality online spaces, I think, excites me the most. And what I mean by that is EDC did a workshop earlier this week on active learning. And we had two colleagues from ELC presenting and a colleague from APSS. And the APSS colleague presented on U-Reply, which many of us are familiar with, which is like a whole package of student response system that you can use face-to-face and online and encourage engagement, which I thought was fantastic then and I still do. And then Mary presented on Pear Deck, which was students actually, you know, getting involved in the slides and things like that, which I really like. And I thought, yeah, this is a bit more of a different online space, isn't it? This takes you out of Zoom and on somewhere else. And then Eric presented on Mural, which gets short sold sometimes as just like it's an interactive whiteboard. And it is obviously so much more than that. And especially on Mural, where I saw like icons of people charging across the screen. You could see where the people were moving, not icons, cursors. And Eric saying, look, some people are being naughty and going to the wrong space and things like that. It made me laugh. And it also made me feel, yeah, this is like a virtual space we're in now. This feels a little bit more like that. So I think it's virtual, it's online spaces that feel, this feels good with four of us with a small amount of camera fees to look at. But if you've got 50, it doesn't look so good. So the idea of the online space where you're in a space together, a bit like Second Life was, and Second Life never took off. So I suppose I'm excited about those sorts of spaces. I'm not totally sold on the fact that Meta, will be at the heart of this. I don't think that's for the best necessarily at all. So I don't want to say a metaverse, but the idea of these online spaces where we can bring people together that into different places and it feels as if not you're there, but it's more engaging and more involving. Those kinds of things excite me at the moment. Yeah, that.
And what is the teacher's role then in those spaces? What would you say? Does the teacher's role change at all when they move from the physical classroom space to these online spaces?
I don't think the good teacher's role changes so much. If you've seen these videos of, I believe, Eric Mazur and teaching assistants doing their flipped classroom, so the students have done the boring bit at home and they're then all face-to-face in a room and there's groups of students and there's four of them over there, there's like four groups of students and someone standing on a high chair and shouting. That kind of thing, I think, is good learning or good teaching if you can do that, and especially if you've got teaching assistants. Put that online in the spaces that I'm talking about, these virtual spaces, and that's what it is. So yeah, guide on the side, not sage on the stage, facilitator rather than lecturers. So yeah, it's teachers facilitating.
I only ask that because I think in the last podcast that you did, we had the discussion of, you know, is this going down the road where the computers will eventually replace the teachers? And at that time, I believe you said no, but we just want to come back to that question.
I think that's a separate thing. I think the teacher can replace the computer can replace the teacher to a certain extent if you've got what's it called? I can't, the word escapes me at the moment. If I'm working through something and I don't do well, and then the AI tells me maybe you should take a different pathway because you've not done well here, and from your answer we predict that you should, adaptive learning, that's the phrase. So I think in adaptive learning, when I think of adaptive learning, which I'm thinking of generally being asynchronous and possibly without a human teacher present, I think the machine can start to replace the teacher to a certain extent there. So in a 2-hour session that I'm doing online, I do have my AI teacher there guiding me and telling things. What I'm talking about in the idea of the metaverse or the virtual world, the teacher is definitely still there and is a participant in it.
So as AI can be used almost as a tool for feedback, right? It might even make the teacher's job easier because that you can get the computer to give the student feedback.
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, as I say, it's not replacing the teacher. It's taking the role of a teacher when the teacher can't be there. Do you know what I mean? It'd be slightly spooky if I was doing my study at home and like, get the teacher's in the room, like, go away, leave me on my own. I don't want a real teacher with me when I'm studying at my own pace. But the idea that a non-judgmental AI teacher is there and is thinking of a way that it can guide me, for me, is good.
So instead of the computer replacing the teacher, then I guess the conclusion we've come to is that the computer just facilitates the job of the teacher and keeps making the teacher's job easier. As much as, you know, we might think that, oh, it's bringing about all this change and it's given us, we've got to plan these, you know, different lessons in different formats and online and face-to-face. And
the teacher is programming the computer so that the computer can look over 100 student shoulders at the same time and give them tailored advice, the advice from the teacher. But the teacher can't do that. So the teacher is somehow programming the machine to do that on their behalf at that moment. Yeah.
Yeah, Darren, I was wondering if there have been any silver linings to any of this over the last couple of years, because of course, it's not just here in Hong Kong, but throughout the world, educators have been forced to go from a face-to-face mode to an online mode or a hybrid mode, whether they wanted to or not. And it seems that we're going to go in that direction anyway, because of course the research is showing that there's a need for it, and why not? But has there been any silver linings to all of this experience?
There's been the greater exposure of educational technologies and the fact, the evidence showing that to a certain extent they work. So I think that's a positive.
Yeah.
There's a flip side of that as well, which is, in the past, any teacher that chose to use this technology did just that. They chose. So it was an active decision. I'm not in favor of forcing people to be using this technology, to be honest. And the possible negative is a reaction against it and the burnout. I went to an ELC session, which was really good, training session. And somebody said, what would you like next? And people were writing ideas like something that involves pen and paper. Yeah, you know, a session in which we smash up technology and educational developers and beat them up. They didn't say that last bit, I'm exaggerating, but I'm wondering if there's going to be some kind of backlash against the technology because it wasn't a choice. With students, I really don't think that that's going to be the case. The statistics seem to show that that's not the case, that there's not a backlash from students. Yes, they want more face-to-face than they've had, but they still want the online. So this is not a silver lining. The silver lining is that we're all more familiar with it and we're becoming adept with it, and I don't think myself as a senior EDO has to sell it anymore as compared to what I did in the past. But there might be a backlash against it, especially because the way we've implemented it has been for many people too quickly, and for many people not with the preparation that they needed. So their experience of online teaching maybe is always going to be shaped by the horror of being forced to do it. I'm not sure if I'm expressing myself there. Do you know what I mean?
Exactly. And I think if we wanted to sum up, you know, these what you've talked about in these 2 years, these, you know, all these changes, 2 years ago when you joined us, it was almost like, oh, what do I do, how do I do this, how can I teach online, what platform do you use, how can I check the assessment? But now 2 years later, this is it, you know, this is the future. You know, this is no longer a what do I do thing or an emergency response, or, you know, this is the direction we're going. And the students have accepted it, as you've pointed out. In fact, the students like it because they like the flexibility, and it's opened up so many other doors to them and of how they can themselves learn. There have been silver linings. And as you said, you know, the computer, the technology can also make our jobs a lot easier, even though we might be resistant to the idea of, as we were resistant to the idea of online teaching, now we're resistant to the idea of continuing with hybrid teaching. But, ultimately, you know, this is going to be a good thing, right, in the long
term. I mean, I'm not going to say that in a pandemic that's cost the lives of millions of people that there have been positives. I cannot bring myself to phrase things like that. It's been absolutely terrible for the entire world, of course. In terms of how it's affected directly my job, I have to admit that it's for the future of education, the fact that we have been exposed to educational technologies is not all bad, and we can build on that moving forward with perhaps less skepticism. The skepticism that I think teachers may have moving forward would be perhaps justified skepticism rather than just I'm unfamiliar with the tool and therefore I don't want to use it because I don't know about it. So that's a silver lining. When teachers now say to me, I don't want to do this in future, I can say why, and they can give me an informed answer, and then I have to work with that. Whereas in the past, I could kind of think, ha, you know, you've never tried it, you don't know. Now the teachers have tried it, they do know. So they're at least basing their opinions on it on experience, not a natural experience, a very forced and painful experience, but experience nonetheless.
Right. And it's an experience, of course, that we adapt to and we get used to. And
my goodness, that's been shown, hasn't it? Human animals, we are very adaptable. Yes.
We're adaptive, adaptive creatures, and change is the only constant in life. And yeah, we adapt to those changes, right? Well, Darren, thank you. Thank you for being with us today. I think we could definitely continue this conversation.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, we're out of time.
Maybe in another 2 years.
Another 2 years we'll be on. And it'll be like, So that metaverse.
There'll be robots.
Didn't work out, did it? I'll be like, no, that didn't work. That didn't.
There will be robots here. There'll be a teacher in your living room, a hologram.
With me. I can't go away. Yeah.
We'll all be wearing those virtual reality goggles, won't we?
Yes, we will. Yeah, thanks for inviting me. Always a pleasure.
Thank you.
Thank you for sharing with our listeners. They really appreciate it. We really appreciate it. And hope everybody's doing well there. Adapt to the positive changes technology is bringing. So our guest today, Darren Harbit from the Educational Development Center at PolyU, thank you for being with us today, and thank you, everybody.
Thank you.
Thanks.